a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now, socially distancing from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Very nice to see you again. How are you?
Nice to see you. I am, it's been schwitzy.
It's a little schwitzy.
It's been really hot. It's been heat wavy.
Yes. Well, Helen, I have a little bit of news that I'm excited to share.
Really?
I actually have a new job. It is for 1 week. I have a 1 week job writing on a game show. But here's the fun part. See if you can guess which specific part of the TV game show I have been hired to write.
I'm going to blindly guess the part you have to write the things before people go to bathroom break.
Before people go to bathroom break. That's a very reasonable guess. But no, I am not writing the questions. I'm not writing the bathroom break stuff. This is a show where people say an answer, then they say, you know, some bonus content, some frill, as they call it in the biz. And then I get to write the part where the host says something in response to that, because so far all they have the host saying is thank you or that's interesting. So I get to write that part, and I did the math today. There are approximately 800 instances where this happens, and I have to write 800 different ways of saying thank you or that's interesting.
No, you have to find 800 different ways of saying thank you or that's interesting.
Exactly. So if,
right on.
Oh,
or
Helen,
good on
Helen,
ya.
I'm down to 799. Thank you so much for helping me. That's right. And they say show business isn't glamorous. So, Helen, I may borrow from you today if you happen to say anything after I give a fun fact. Get ready. That may show up on television later this fall.
Well, buckle up for a lot of wow.
798. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guests. Helen, who is up first?
He is an Emmy-winning actor, seen recently as a recurring character on Bless This Mess, and known for his 7 seasons as Jerry on Parks and Recreation. It's Jim O'Hare.
Hi, Jim O'Hare.
Hey, Jake Keith. How are you? Hey, Helen.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Hi, Jim.
So happy to have you on the show. We've been trying to do this for a long time, and I'm so happy that it all worked out now.
We have, and let me, fanboy for a little bit. Jake Keith, I used to be obsessed with Beat the Geeks.
Oh, no kidding.
Years ago. So, yeah, I have, I've been a fan of the Keith Man for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Helen, I don't care at all about.
Oh, wow.
So, as long as, yeah.
Well.
What a shocking development.
As the official scorekeeper, I already know who's going to win.
Uh-oh.
Just kidding there, Helen. Just kidding.
Jim, I have to tell you, the first time I actually met you in person, I told you, which is something that I still believe today, that every time that I've rewatched Parks and Recreation, which has been several times now, I've been through it, every time I appreciate more and more how wonderful you are and how great your work is. Except the first time that I met you and I got to tell you that in person, I accidentally said The Office instead of Parks and Rec.
Yeah,
was pretty bad. And I got the feeling that was not the first time that it happened to you.
Just so you know, the minute you said The Office, I didn't hear another word. So I don't know what you said to me. I don't care what you said to me. Dude, it happens all the time. The other day, I'm driving through, a Carl's Jr. or something, and the girl I pull up to get me, and she goes, oh, she got flustered and she goes, oh my God, I can't believe it. The Office is my favorite show. And I said, yeah, I enjoy it too. And then she pauses and she goes, I'm so sorry. Parks and Rec. I go, no, it's all good. It's all good. I did a, I guess you'd call it kind of a podcast thing, an interview thing with 3 of the people from The Office last month. It was Kate Flannery and Brian Baumgartner and Oscar Nunez and, oh, God, she played Jan.
Melora Hardin.
Melora Hardin, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the first question I asked all of them was, hey, listen, you guys, what was it like being on the second greatest show of all time? And there was this pause, and then Kate, who I love, I know Kate, as a friend, the first thing came out of her mouth, I don't know, Jim, tell us, you know, so, you know, because I am an Office super fan.
Helen mentioned in your intro that you are an Emmy winning actor, but people might be surprised that your Emmy did not come from Parks and Recreation. Tell us what you got your Emmy for.
You know, after Parks, my career took a lovely turn where I was getting offered things rather than having to audition and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, always the dream. And so we get this offer from a soap opera, which I'd never done. They wanted to use me and Monica Haran, just the sweetest person in the whole world. And they just kind of it was going to be like a visual bit. We were going to be this couple doing a guest spot on the soap opera. Well,
it was a daytime soap opera?
A daytime soap opera called Bold and the Beautiful. And
what?
Yes, and we were the comic relief. So it went, and it went well. And they call us again. Would you come back and do this again? Because our audience, whatever, loved it. So we went back again, and then I'll never forget. I was heading to Chicago for something. I'm in a car heading to the airport, and the phone rings, and I pick it up, and I go, hello, and he goes, hi, this is so-and-so Ms. Bell from Bold and the Beautiful, and I want to congratulate you on your Emmy nomination. I'm like, what? No, BS. So I wasn't even going to go to the ceremony because I had no expectation of winning, and friends of mine were opening in this show that I wanted to see, and so I kind of cut a deal with, I said, okay, I will show up. But I said to the driver, they told me that my category is at 5:25. So at by 5:40, I'm going to be in your car and we'll head to where we got to go. So it was Larry King. Him and someone else are presenting the award. And he shows the people on the screen. And I'm watching him like, oh boy, that person's really good. They're going to win this. And Larry King goes, and the winner is Jim O'Hare for Bold and the Beautiful. And
what?
I swear to you, if you see the somewhere on, you know, line somewhere, there was just this look on my face because all that went through my mind was, damn, that is so familiar. I know that name. But nothing was connecting. And then the girl next to me from the show starts hitting me. And I look at her like, what is happening? And then I realize, holy crap, I won the damn thing. So now I'm walking up. They're like, I haven't prepared anything. I thought I was going to be in a car right now heading over to my buddy's house. Anyway, so it was quite...
Wait, so this... Was the character like guest star in a daytime soap
opera?
Yes,
best guest star in a daytime soap or daytime whatever the hell. Yeah. Yeah.
That is crazy.
It was crazy. And it ruined my whole night because I had to stay for the CBS, all the parties and all that crap.
Oh,
and I had to walk around.
God,
the
don't you just hate that when you win an Emmy and it ruins your. Oh, God. My condolences, Jim.
I couldn't go to the parties and carry my food plate and the Emmy. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Where's the Emmy now, Jim?
It's actually, to be honest, it was on my desk for a year. And then I went away to do a show for like 3 months. And when I came back, my friends, without my knowing, had a, because they knew I would just keep it on the desk. They had a thing built with a plastic case. And it's in my dining room in a plastic case.
What?
On a mantle. It was very sweet. It was because I never would have done that for myself. I just wouldn't have.
It is an improvement from when he just used to wear it on a chain around his neck.
Yes. Well, and it's better for my back. But yes. I will say this. When I was a couple weeks ago shooting a film here, because, you know, everything is crazy now, and they sent the cameras here, and they needed to get a view where they wanted to see. And so I was giving a tour of the house, and I said, oh, pardon the Emmy. I'll try not to get it in the way. And So... It's brought a few laughs for sure.
Excellent. Well, it's wonderful to have you join us.
Thank you
so much for being here, Jim O'Hare. Helen, against whom will Jim be competing?
She is a comedian and writer who hosts the podcast That Black Ass Show, and for over 3 years has been a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. It's Dulce Sloan.
Hello, Dulce.
Hello, friends. Hi, honey.
Hi, Dulce. So nice to see you.
Hi, buddies. What's going on?
Yes. Well, that brings me to my first question, which is that you and Helen know each other. Tell us about that.
I met Helen when I was living in L.A. And I think one day at the Improv, I just started talking to her about Korean dramas. Or were we talking about food or was it Korean dramas?
I don't know how it came up, but it somehow came up that Dulce is... like more Korean than I will ever be in my entire. Like I was born in Korea. My whole family is Korean. And meanwhile, you're a black woman from Atlanta, and you are way more Korean than I will ever be.
Well, like the other day, because like my favorite thing to do is go in the H Mart, and one of my best friends, he loves kimchi pancakes. So I was like, I wonder how hard it is to make these. So I went to the H Mart, one of my favorite places to go.
The H Mart is like a huge Korean supermarket chain.
Yes.
And the H stands for Hanguk, which is how you say Korea in Korean.
Ah. Ah, mm-hmm. Thank you so much. So
so you set out to make kimchi pancakes.
I went kimchi pancakes. And so this older Korean guy had walked by my cart. And I had like all this Korean stuff in my cart. And it's always an old Korean man who walks past me with his hands behind his back. And he'll look at my cart. And he'll look at me. And look at the cart. Look at me, he goes, oh, it's very good, very good. I was like, yeah. And I was like, kamsahamnida. He's like, oh, kamsahamnida. And then he was like, habla espanol. And I was like, yes. So now this Korean man asked me if I speak Spanish, and what? I do. So what? Now I'm talking to this old Korean man in Spanish. He asked me my name is, and I told him, and then he told me his name was Pedro, and I laughed for entirely too long. Not to his face. But after he walked away, I was like, ha-ha, Pedro!
Well, I've never admitted this to you, Dulce, but you post a lot about these amazing, elaborate Korean spreads that you make. I steal those videos and show them to my mother with an overdub of my voice over yours so that she thinks that I have made this amazing, elaborate Korean spread because I don't cook at all. And so, and she's always like, oh, hello! She's so proud of me, and it's actually you.
That's
she's,
hilarious.
My mom is proud of you. My mom is very proud of you.
Tell her I said, kamsahamnida.
Just I want to ask you a little bit about some of your work that you've done. People, of course, know you from The Daily Show. You've continued to do your work as a correspondent while you've been in quarantine. I've noticed that you did a lot of bits on the show where you got to be in crazy costumes. Is that something that you miss now doing the shows from your home?
One day they turned me into a Christmas tree, and I'm in a suit, and like they just covered me in like tinsel and decorations. So I'm standing there, we do the quick cut to me, and then when it cuts away, we take a break on the show. And I just went, I went to college. So and they ended up not using it, but the audience thought it was great.
Your diploma at work, yeah.
Yeah, just like I'm just a tree. I was just standing there. I am the Christmas tree. And then I got to play God, which is really funny.
That was great. Well, tell us about the God costume briefly, because that was exceptional to watch.
Well, originally it was, they had like, so they had that long white beard, and there was originally a wig that matched the beard. And Trevor saw me in rehearsal and he's like, no, I want her to have her afro. Mm. So we just spent all this time braiding my afro down to get it underneath this wig. And me and the makeup artist were like, yeah, okay. So now, and so, but there's like a picture of our, one of my favorite parts is when I still have like the long wig on. There's a picture of our director, Paul Penalino, and he's kneeling in the hallway and I'm blessing him.
With a white beard and a black afro.
Yes. But I didn't have the afros at this point. Oh, okay. I'm just giving you the European Anglo-Christian God.
Yep, yep.
So, and it was funny because when we finally went to the afro and I was like, oh, hair like wool. That's what it should be. All right. So just running around like a jackass. But it's been fun. I got green screens in here. I got big lights. I got a box of grits. I'm trying to get into the union after all of this because I have been putting all kind of cameras and lights, and you know, and they gave us all of this equipment. And
yeah,
there's all this.
Wow.
You got to Taft-Hartley those grits.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I got between the grits and the wooden box. I got a FedEx box and an Amazon box. Listen, they could be. I don't know if they're grips. I don't know. Best Boys.
I thought you said grits. That's what I was going to say.
No.
I was like, wait a minute. Why are there grits?
No. It is a box of grits.
Okay, it wasn't completely off.
I don't know what you. I don't know if they're stage hands.
Right,
I don't
right.
know what union.
Yes.
I need them to be applying to.
We'll look into that and get back to you. For sure.
Teamsters, perhaps.
Yes. Well, we look forward to seeing more of that, and we're so happy that you joined us, Dulce Sloan.
Hello!
Hello, indeed. Dulce and Jim, we ask each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Jim, you said you know a lot about the November 3rd elections, the musical Les Miserables, and in keeping with that level of seriousness, also the TV show Mama's Family. Where
yeah, and yep. By expert, you know, who knows what the hell I know.
But exactly, yes, we'll find out.
I'm involved in all three of those things.
Excellent. We can't wait to find out more. Whereas Dulce, you said you know a lot about the TV show Star Trek: The Next Generation.
That was me. That's me, Helen.
That was you, Helen Hong. The TV show Star Trek: Deep Space Nine.
My favorite.
Not as much of a ooh-ooh from Helen. And historical Korean dramas, as we found out. Excellent. Well, later on, we're going to ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, trust but verify. Up first is Jim. Jim, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
It's from Greg and Mona Yeager of Chicago, Illinois. Listeners, if you would like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved.
Thank you, Helen, and thank you, Greg and Mona. All right, Jim, in the topic of trust but verify, trust. Jim, they both are signs that you don't trust someone, but what is the difference between mistrust and distrust? Mistrust with an M and distrust with a D.
Mistrust is just, you don't really have all the facts. So you're like, well, this person hasn't really proven to me either. You know, my experience with this person, I just can't really put it there. Distrust means they have proven in the past. They have absolutely screwed things up. They have not been honest with me or whatever. I cannot trust them. Mistrust means I'm questionable because I don't really know their motives, but I don't have much information to go on other than this just doesn't seem right.
All right. We've got Jim's answer. We don't know yet if he is correct. Dulce, you can steal if you don't think he's got it exactly right. What do you think?
Oh, I think he's right.
Uh-oh. Dulce, you're going to agree with Jim is what you're saying.
Yes, he sounds bad. Listen, I trust a white man in many things. My mama always told me, if you don't know nothing, ask D white man. And okay. Jim's giving me very much D white man vibe.
Well, I trust this segment is going to get us in trouble with a lot of people. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges table for the facts.
Here are the facts. You mistrust something when you have no reason to believe the source, like advice from a stranger, or if you have a general sense of unease as to the reliability of the information. You can't put your finger on it, but something doesn't feel right. You distrust something when you know from previous experience that the information or its source is unreliable. They know what they did.
That's right. Now, for instance, I might mistrust anyone who says they're going to give me $15 million, but I distrust the email from a Nigerian prince who says it because I swear I'm not falling for that again. Helen, how did they do?
I think Jim got both points.
I think he did as well. Congratulations. Yeah. 2 points for Jim. Dulce, wow. You were correct to agree, but Jim got it first, so he gets the 2 points. But
you guys, I never got the information. Is this $100,000 a point? What does this come out to?
Sure.
We're going to talk about that after the show.
I just want to make sure, because I certainly wouldn't be here for nothing.
Oh, no, nor would I, nor would Helen, nor would Dulce. No, Jim, I will say you do have favored nations with everybody else on the show.
Excellent. Well,
we were all getting
better.
Paid the exact same amount.
You can mistrust us.
Yes, here we go.
I have the feeling you're right.
All right, up next is Dulce. Dulce, for your turn in the topic of trust but verify. They both might be ways to earn your trust, but what is the difference between verify and confirm? Verify and confirm.
Okay, so I think that verify is you take your own information that you have mm-hmm. and compare it with their information mm-hmm. to make sure that it's correct. Confirm means that you're just agreeing with the information that they gave you.
Okay. Dulce, by the way, is stretching out her headphone cord across her face as if that's where she keeps her answers or perhaps to hide from the truth. But we do have Dulce's answer. We don't know yet if she is correct. Jim, what do you think?
I got to tell you, I'm pretty much with Dulce. I think confirmation is I'm just agreeing to something where if I'm going to verify, I'm doing the work. I'm putting mm-hmm. in the time and the effort to see if this is a fact or not. Whereas confirming, the neighbor could have told me this is a fact, and I'm going to tell you, yep, it's good. I heard it from the neighbor.
Okay, so you're going to agree with the black woman just as Dulce agreed with the white man.
You know me. I go with the black woman, and this is what it is.
Can't go wrong.
Cannot go wrong.
Well, this segment is getting verifiably too long. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. When you verify, you are checking up on something that you are not sure is accurate or not. Like, does that hot person on Tinder really look like their pictures? When you confirm, you're checking up on something that you believe to be accurate, but are making sure. Like confirming a dinner reservation with that hot person on Tinder. Clearly, Jay Keith wrote this joke because who goes out to dinner with someone on Tinder?
I don't. Oh, okay. I thought that's what the kids did these days. I don't know. I've been out of it. That is correct, Helen. And I can confirm that we did verify those definitions. Helen, how did our guest do?
I think I'm going to give Dulce half a point for each definition because you kind of were in the ballpark, but you weren't quite precise. So half point for each means 1 point total for Dulce.
All right. And what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Dulce Sloan has 1 point and Jim O'Hare has 2 points.
All right, but those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. Helen, we have a sponsor for this episode of Go Fact Yourself.
I love to hear it.
And you're going to love to hear even more when I tell you the name of this company. Helen, it is called Kitty Poo Club.
Kitty Poo Club.
Kitty Poo Club. Helen, guess what Kitty Poo Club does?
I'm going to take a wild, wild stab and say they send you kitty litter?
They do. They do not send you kitty poo. They send you the stuff that the kitty poo goes in. But it's not just kitty litter that they send you. Every month, Kitty Poo Club delivers to your door an affordable, high-quality, recyclable litter box that is pre-filled with the litter of your choice. They actually sent me a box. My cats just used it this morning, I can attest, by both sight and smell. but it's great because they have this odor-absorbing litter in there, and they send a new box every month, and the boxes are leak-proof, they're eco-friendly, and they have a fun design for every season. The one I got has a little barn theme on it, and it is adorable. You, of course, are a dog person. I am a cat person, but I'm sure we can all agree that the worst part of owning a pet is dealing with, well, with their poop.
Yeah.
Well, imagine you as a dog person, if your dog pooped several times a day in your own home, you probably would not enjoy that very much.
No, I might not even have a dog.
No, no. I do, of course, love my cats, but it does mean that I have to have that litter box in my home. But Kitty Poo Club, it takes care of the more unpleasant parts of cat ownership so you can get back to loving your furry little friends. So they send you this box of litter every month, and when the month is up, you don't have to deal with digging the stuff out. You just recycle the box, and Kitty Poo Club will automatically deliver a new one to you. You don't have to change used litter. You don't have to clean the box. You fold it right up. You put it in the recycling bin. Done and done. It's fantastic.
I just love the fact that they're called Kitty Poo Club. I mean, what an adorable name.
I like that fact, too. I got to be honest, even if I didn't love what they did, I would love advertising for Kitty Poo Club. But I also happen to love what they do. And what I also love is that right now, Kitty Poo Club is offering our listeners 20% off their first order if they go to set up an auto ship at kittypooclub.com and enter the promo code GOFACT. It's kittypooclub.com. Helen, what is that promo code?
GOFACT.
That's right. GOFACT. And you'll get 20% off when you set up AutoShip. That's kittypooclub.com. And don't forget to enter the promo code
GOFACT
at checkout. Kitty Poo Club.
Thank you, kittypooclub.com.
Congratulations, you've won a ticket to attend an exclusive opportunity in a relaxing environment with two lovers.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a sort of proposition of sorts, but really it's an ad for our podcast. Wonderful. It's a show we do here on Maximum Fun where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into.
I'm Rachel McElroy, and you just heard Griffin McElroy, and we are excited for you to join us as we talk about movies and music and books.
Things like sneezing or the idea of rain.
Can you get news or information you can use?
Absolutely, you cannot, because we're here to talk to you about pumpernickel bread.
You can find new episodes on Wednesdays.
So catch the wave!
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Jim O'Hare with 2 points and Dulce Sloan with 1 point. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Jim, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the November 3rd elections, the musical Les Miserables, and the TV show Mama's Family. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about the November 3rd elections.
Well, yeah, when I say I know a lot about them, I want the crazy man out of office.
I see.
So that's what I mean when I say I know a lot about it.
Now, I should point out that we are recording this before the election, but this episode will drop after the election. So
yes.
is there anything you'd like to say to your future self or to the future listeners?
Here's what I say to my future self.
Yes.
If it doesn't go the way you want to, put the knife stop.
Okay, an important public service stop. From Jim O'Hare. Oh no, he's still going.
Put the knife down. It will be okay. Put it down.
Jim, I like that you know your future self well enough that you have to say it four times in order to get you to listen to yourself.
Please, I say that about cheesecake, and look at me. I don't put it down. So when it comes to the knife, put the knife down.
Yes. All right, Jim, you also said you know a lot about the musical Les Miserables.
The reason I love Les Mis is, number one, it's just this amazing musical, the heart, the passion for each character. There's never been a time I've seen it where I didn't bawl like a baby at the end. It's just a really special show to me. I have seen it literally all over the world. I've seen it 19 times, and
oh, wow.
I would be happy to see it again tomorrow if there was a production up and running.
Wow.
Wonderful.
And then, yep. You know, I'm going to say it. Yep. I love me some Mama's Family.
Yes, let's get to that. Tell us about great that. Show. Dulce is cheering along in
celebration.
It's
a great show. I was 10 when it was on, but me and my brother loved it.
Yeah, I do too. And there's two different sections of Mama's Family. And I will say my preference is the later sections with Iola, the neighbor. Who I just think is just awesome. But yeah, it was originally on Carol Burnett. They did the show on Carol Burnett, and I loved it on there. It was a skit that turned into a sitcom. I would guess, I could be wrong, but I've seen each episode, I don't know, 10, 15 times, I would imagine.
Wow.
'Cause it's on, you know, it's still on all the time. So
yeah.
I do love it. And I've had a chance to work with Vicki Lawrence on an episode of
Cool
What
Kids.
Did We Do Together?
Cool Kids.
No. Allie McBeal.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Years ago.
Kind of random.
Yeah.
Wow. I have to say, you know, one of the things I love about hosting this show is that we get to have on people who I'm a fan of, and I never would have guessed that Jim O'Hare would be both as knowledgeable about Les Mis as he is Mama's Family. It's quite a contrast. We love it. We celebrate all of it. So to summarize, Jim, you said you know a lot about the November 3rd elections, the musical Les Miserables, and the TV show Mama's Family. Today, we're going to quiz you about Les Miserables.
Oh, okay. I'm nervous, but let's do it.
All right. So you said you've seen several productions. Do you have a favorite of the ones that you've seen?
So many favorites. Actually, the last one on Broadway did a new version of it about, I don't know, 4 years ago. And so I got to see that one. And they upped their game a little bit. The set was a little different. That was one of my favorites. But one of my favorites that I did not see in person was PBS did the big group thing with a bunch of people. And so that I have that, and I watch that at least once a year. I just pop it in when I just need to. And the sad part is for anyone who lives near me or in my house, I sing along.
All right, Jim. So just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our three-part question. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are five trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a total of 2 hints in these 5 questions. Now, Dulce, do listen closely because you can steal if Jim gets any of these wrong. Dulce, by the way, how much do you know about the musical Les Miserables?
Can't even say it.
I know. Yeah. By the way, I know it might be sacrilegious to fans of that show, but from here on in, I'm just going to say Les Mis because my tongue is sufficiently tied.
That is how it's referred to. That's
yes,
okay.
Indeed. All right, here's question number one for Jim O'Hare. The musical Les Mis is based on the novel Les Miserables published in 1862. Who is the author of that novel who also wrote The Hunchback of Notre Dame?
I believe your answer would be Victor Hugo.
Helen?
That is correct.
Say hi.
Baby.
Fun fact, as we discussed with Rachel Bloom in a previous episode, there has been a musical version of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but it has yet to make it to Broadway. All right, here's question number two. As we find out repeatedly in the first song of the show and later, what is Jean Valjean's prison number? And yes, please sing it.
Okay, I'm sorry for what's about to happen. So you do what you will with your, if people need to hit buttons or whatever. But 2, 4, 6, 0, 1.
Woo! Applause from all of our guests and panelists and hosts. Helen, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes, we don't know if it's musically correct, but lyrically, that is definitely correct.
It is not musically correct. No.
That is correct for the point. Right. Fun fact, according to some authors, Victor Hugo chose this number because it corresponded to the date he believed he was conceived, June 24, 1801.
Wow, what an ego on that guy, huh?
Yes.
Really?
Wow. Well, so I'm gonna, in the future, I'm going to go, 020462.
And I don't want to know why you know the date you were conceived. All right, Jim.
Don't you worry. I know all that. Okay.
All right, Jim, you're 2 for 2. Here's question number 3. In 2012, Vulture ranked every major song in the musical. They put On My Own at number 1, but what song, which includes the lyric, "Here's a hint of gold stuck into a tooth," did they rank dead last?
Master of the House.
Helen, is it Master of the House?
It is not Master
no,
of the House.
No, I'm terribly sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I'm sorry Dulce gets a chance to steal Dulce.
Oh, I was so sure of it.
I am failing as a theater kid. I have not seen it.
Nowhere. All right, I'm sorry. No answer there. The correct answer, Dog Eats Dog.
Yeah,
Dog
yeah,
Eats
yeah.
Dog. That was
it's when he's in the subway after yep. he's gone
in
down.
The sewer. In the sewer,
in
yeah.
the sewer, yeah, yep. subway. What You know yep. what I mean, yeah.
Yes, exactly. All right, well, let's see
I'm
if
so
you can.
I'm so mad at myself.
That's yeah. all right. It happens. Well, I'm sure you can bounce back. Here's question number 4. Though millions of people have seen Les Mis on stage, millions more have only seen its 2012 movie adaptation, which, despite some questionable casting, Russell Crowe, earned 8 Academy.
Russell Crowe, yes.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
It earned 8 Academy Award nominations. One of those nominations was for Best Original Song because it had a song that was written especially for the movie and sung by Hugh Jackman. What is the name of that added song?
Oh, damn. I don't know that. I mean,
you do have a hint available if you'd like to use that first hint.
I do want a hint. Yeah, yeah.
Helen,
yeah.
How about that first hint?
The title is one word and is a synonym for unexpectedly. And Billy Ocean and Olivia Newton-John each had hits with different songs that also have this title.
Oh, damn. Those are good hints, right?
I thought so. You know, we wrote them, but yeah.
I feel it begins with the letter B, and I don't know what I'm basing that on.
All right.
I don't know it. I'm going to have to
okay,
go.
Okay, I'm sorry. No answer there. Dulce with a chance to steal.
Surprise?
Helen, is it Surprise?
It is not Surprise.
No, a very reasonable guess. No, we're looking for Suddenly. Suddenly is the song there, yes.
Yeah, I don't even know the song, so I'm not, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. Mm. Fun fact, though, the movie won 3 Oscars of the 8 nominations that it received. Suddenly lost Best Original Song to Skyfall from Adele. All right, here's question number 5. This is tricky, but you do still have a hint available, and I think you got a chance at this one. Here we go. On January 24, 2016, Hamilton creator and star Lin-Manuel Miranda added to his resume by providing an offstage voice during a live performance of Les Mis on Broadway. He speaks twice, and both times his lines begin, "You at the barricade, listen to this." What is the name of the character who says these lines?
Oh, damn, you at the barricade, listen to this. None are coming to help you to fight. You're on your own. You have no friends. I don't know his name. But
would you like
your
second hint?
Yes, give me my second hint.
Helen, how about that second hint?
He's an officer in the army.
Sergeant?
Helen, is it Sergeant?
He's not Sergeant.
No, I'm terribly sorry. Don't save the chance to steal.
Lieutenant?
Is it Lieutenant?
It is not Lieutenant.
Oh. No, it is not Lieutenant. No, we wanted to give that to you so bad. It's simply an army officer. An army officer is that character's name in the script.
Tough.
That was tough. That was tough.
You're a real human, Jonathan Keithland.
I don't know who that is, but that person would be very upset to hear that. He is also referred to as the loud hailer because he speaks through a loud hailer, which is what they called a megaphone back then. By the way, Lin-Manuel Miranda once said that that one backstage shot was much more nerve-wracking than doing Hamilton 8
wow.
days a week. All right, you stumbled a little bit, but now here is your time.
I stumbled. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you don't have to apologize. These are tough. It's always a little difficult for us calibrating the difficulty of the questions, but you gave it your best try. And here now is your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Jim, one member of the original Broadway cast of Les Mis has had a particularly long and celebrated journey with the show. She was nominated for a Tony for playing one character in the original 1987 Broadway production, played that same character in an all-star 1995 concert recorded at Royal Albert Hall that aired on PBS's Great Performances
Yay!
And was released as an album that you may be familiar with at least once a year. Then she joined the Broadway revival that I believe you saw to play play that character's mother in 2007, 20 years after she'd opened the show on Broadway. So, for up to 3 points, what is the name of either of the characters she played? What is the name of that concert recorded at Royal Albert Hall? And what is the name of this Tony-nominated actor?
Okay, it's Cosette, obviously. Because you're saying she played the little girl and then her mother.
I didn't say little girl. I just said she played one character on Broadway, and then later played a character that character's mother.
So she played Fontaine, and then Cosette is my
okay.
What
is
that
your
would
answer?
Be.
Okay.
Okay. The second part was
what is that special called, that concert that was recorded at Royal Albert Hall?
My God, I thought it was just like the 25th. Oh God, I watched it. The 25th anniversary special Les Mis.
25th anniversary of that special Les Mis. Okay, and then who is that Tony nominated actor?
I am embarrassed to say because I love her, but I don't know her name.
Can't pull the name. No,
Can't pull the name.
Answer there. Okay.
No.
All right. Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is a multiple Tony, Olivier, and Grammy Award nominee who has appeared on Broadway in 10 different productions, including the original Broadway production and revival of Les Miserables. It's Judy Kuhn.
Hello, Judy Kuhn.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I can't believe how many times you've seen Les Miserables.
Yes. I know. And actually, after the last time I saw the new one on Broadway, the word got out that I was there, I guess. So I started getting a bunch of DMs saying, why didn't you come back and see us and stuff? And I didn't go to because sometimes I'll be at things and people will say, oh, the cast would like to meet you afterward. But nobody came up and I'm not looking to impose myself on anybody. And I was so mad because I so wanted to go back. Oh, my God. You're amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You are amazing. And obviously the pandemic has affected everybody, but it's been especially hard on people in the arts. You, I imagine, were in the midst of preparing for a show when things went down.
Yeah, I was 2 weeks into rehearsals for a revival of the Stephen Sondheim show, Assassins, when we shut down. I mean, it's been devastating for the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, truly devastating.
How are people on Broadway coping? Like, what are people doing?
You know, doing a lot of self-taping for whatever TV and film productions around. Doing a lot of online benefits for the Actors Fund and various other, you know, for campaigns and, you know, doing whatever we can do to stay sane and healthy.
Well, I mean, I've been doing outdoor comedy shows, so I'm surprised they haven't been like, all right, guys, listen, we're going to set up a stage outside and 5, 6, 7, 8. Let's go. Very surprised nobody set up like a show in the park.
Wow.
There's been a little bit of that, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, Dulce, you're like the Judy Garland of today. You just need to find your Mickey Rooney and let's find a park and put on a show. Judy, let's talk about some of the stuff that you've done in the past. A lot of people may not realize that they are familiar with your voice, even if they haven't seen you on Broadway, because you were the voice of a very popular song in a very popular Disney movie. Tell us about that.
Yes, I provided the singing voice in Disney's Pocahontas.
Whoa!
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
So you sang Colors of the Wind.
I sang Colors in the Wind
in the movie.
You sang Colors of that Wind, girl. Yeah.
And you were involved from the beginning. You actually did the original demo, and then they just kept you throughout the process, right?
I did. I got a call. I knew Stephen Schwartz. We'd worked together before, and I knew Alan Menken a bit, but we hadn't worked together. But they asked me to demo this. Demo Colors of the Wind after they'd written it. It was when Disney was thinking about whether they wanted to make a Pocahontas movie. They just got so used to me singing those songs that they hired me to do the music, and then they hired a Native American actress to do the dialogue.
Judy, do you consider yourself one of the Disney princesses?
I personally don't, but I am considered.
Yes, if you sang those songs.
I am a Disney. Yes. I guess I am a Disney princess.
Yes.
Yeah. Now,
come on, Blue Corn Moon.
Yes. Well, it's funny. I actually was going to ask you about that. I'd read in an interview, and I couldn't tell if you were kidding or not, that you said, I still to this day have no idea what a Blue Corn Moon is.
That is correct. And then apparently, when I said that out loud, Stephen Schwartz confessed that he made that up.
Wow.
He doesn't know what it is either?
No.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, it just goes to show you
all these actors who were so concerned about having the proper lyrical interpretation of something. It turns out you had all the success and neither you nor the writer knew what it meant.
Yeah, every Native American person that saw that movie was, what the hell is a blue corn? Are they just making stuff up over there?
I think it's
white
a chip.
Folks are at it again. Yes.
Well, let's talk about your theatrical experiences. On Broadway, you've been in shows like Mystery of Edwin Drood, Chess, She Loves Me, Fun Home with Michael Cerveris, who we had on a recent episode, Fiddler on the Roof. One of your first shows that you did on Broadway was called Rags, which was very well acclaimed but didn't last very long. How did you find out that it was closed?
Well, it was the evening after we opened. I think I was vacuuming my apartment, something I probably hadn't done for many weeks. And I had the TV news on and the logo came up on the screen. So I got all excited. I thought they were going to say something nice about my show. So I turned off the vacuum and I turned up the volume on the TV, and the person on the TV looked straight at me and said, Rags, which opened last night at the Mark Hellinger Theater, will close tomorrow after 4 performances.
Oh! How does a show close that quick? Am I not?
Producers decide to pull the plug. Now, usually producers would inform the actors before they inform the press, but they neglected to do that in this case. So.
The glamour of show business. Yes.
But
on the bright side, am I right that the timing of that show closing so soon actually opened up an opportunity for you to go into Les Mis?
Yes, it did. I had had a couple auditions for the show, and I guess, you know, they assumed that I was not going to be available for it until they heard that Rags had closed. So I got called back in for one more audition and then was offered Cosette.
Oh, my. How aware were you of Les Mis? Because it was already a big hit in London before it came over to Broadway, right?
Yeah, no, I'd read about the show, and people were calling it the musical Nicholas Nickleby because it was the same directors. It also started at the Royal Shakespeare Company and was based on a great epic 19th century novel. So, yeah, and I mean, I'd heard a lot about it. I hadn't seen it. I might have heard some of the music from it, you know, everybody wanted to be in that show.
Yeah. And when did you have a sense that, oh, my God, this actually is the big hit that I thought it might be?
Well, you know, we weren't really thinking about it being a hit. You know, we knew that it had been a big deal in London, but you never, I had just come off a show that closed after 4 performances.
Yeah.
So you never know. Maybe when it's a rehearsal or maybe our first preview. After we were about to open at the Kennedy Center, and I went into work, and I was walking through one of those big foyers at the Kennedy Center by the box office for the Opera House where we were performing, and there was a long, long line went all the way down the hallway and out the door. And I thought, oh, maybe this one won't close after 4 performances.
Judy, how long did you stay with the show, and what went into your decision to leave at the time that you did?
I was in it for a year, I guess, from the time that we opened at the Kennedy Center. And I left at the end of my contract to go do Chess.
Ah, not bad. Mm-hmm. And you opened and got a Tony nomination for that.
I did.
That's amazing.
It lasted a little longer than Rags, but not nearly as long as Les Mis. Let's put it that way.
We should all be so lucky to have 3 different projects that have those different lengths.
Yes.
You returned years later, as we mentioned, in the more recent revival to play the mother of the character you'd originally played. Tell us about what appealed to you about returning to the show and what it was like to play that different role.
It was the 10th anniversary version. I can't even remember what it was. It was some revamped version, and it was pretty much like the original production wise, but it was odd. It was sort of like, you know, when you go back to a childhood home and things look smaller than you remember, or why is that girl wearing my dress? You know, it was sort of, it was very odd, you know, and of course there were people in the company who barely were born when I originally had done it. So it was an odd experience, but it was fun to do.
That's real cool. Last thing I want to ask you about is you you've done and continue online to do teaching. And I was reading that one of the things that you do is you train actors who are well trained but who have never sung. And I'm curious, what's the first thing you try to teach to a person who's accustomed to being on stage but maybe not accustomed to singing?
That there's really no difference between speaking on stage and singing on stage, just that you have music and notes that you have to learn. And obviously there are technical things, you know, like maybe it needs more breath and all of that. But I think that's the big misconception, that people who think of them as singers or people who think of them only as actors have, is that there's some big difference between the two things. If anything, the music should help you in the acting, just like the poetry in Shakespeare helps you with, you know, making acting choices.
What did you think of Jim singing 2, 4, 6, 1?
Don't say it, Judy. I thought
he was excellent.
Yay!
He's got the job.
I love you, Judy. I love you.
Well, that's better than getting points, but let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Jim. We wanted to know about the journey of one particular member of the original Broadway cast of Les Mis, who played one role in the original production and then the mother in a later production, as well as in a Great Performances concert that Jim has seen. So first we want to know, what is the name of either of the characters that this actor played? Helen, what did Jim O'Hare say?
Jim said Cosette and Fantine.
And Judy Kuhn?
That is correct.
That is correct. Yay! Cosette and Fantine.
Fantine is Cosette's mother.
There you go. And you played both. All right. Next, we wanted to know, what was the name of the concert that was recorded at Royal Albert Hall? Helen, what did Jim say?
Jim said the 25th anniversary special of Les Miserables.
And Judy?
That's not correct, though. There was a 25th anniversary.
There was, but that was the one that we were speaking of.
I was in the 10th anniversary concert at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yes, and it actually was called the Dream Cast in Concert, because you were part of the Dream Cast. They assembled people from different productions.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. See, everybody gets to learn. Everybody gets to learn. The encore of that show, by the way, featured 17 different Valjeans from around the world all coming together to sing at the end. That's a lot of dolls to give to a kid. And then finally, Judy, I think you will know the answer to this one. What was the name of that Tony-nominated actor who appeared in both roles and who played in that concert at Royal Albert Hall? Jim was not able to come up with an answer, but Judy Kuhn, can you?
I think her name is Judy Kuhn, but I
that's
can't,
right,
I
it's you, Judy Kuhn. And Jim, is there anything else you'd like to ask or say to our expert while we have her?
Could I ask you a real quick question? So you get the gig, how exciting, even though you don't know a lot about it because it's been in London. Did they want the exact same production? Like, did they just literally move it over and say, this is how we're going to stage it, this is how we're going to sing it? Or did you guys do workshops of it?
Trevor Nunn, who was one of the directors, has a remarkable way of getting you to do exactly what he wants you to do, but making you feel like you've discovered it yourself.
That's a good director.
We did a week of improvisations. We did all kinds of real deep character work and circumstance work and all that stuff. And then slowly made our way to doing the staging. I think it was, I'm assuming it was, maybe we made some changes. I don't know, because I had never seen it. But it was complicated because there was that revolving stage and you couldn't mess with it too much.
Mm-hmm. Judy, I'm so happy that we got to talk to you, and hopefully we'll have you back to talk about some of your other amazing work. If people want to find out more about you and your work, where can they find that?
Well, I have a website. It's judykuhn.net, and I'm on Instagram at judykuhnofficial, and I'm on Twitter at judykuhn1. I guess there's another Judy Kuhn on Twitter.
What?
I'm Judy Kuhn 1.
Helen can relate to that. We'll find out later.
There are so many Helen Hongs, and I haven't yet to kill any of them. Judy, before you go, can you please, I know this is a big ask, but can you just sing a few bars of something great? From Les Mis, from Les Mis.
Oh, from Les Mis. Oh, my God.
Can you something?
I dreamed a dream in time gone by, when hope was high and life worth living.
Lovely.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. That was amazing. You didn't warm up. You just went into it. It was amazing.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, everybody. All right.
Good night, Judy.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, Helen, what an ending to that segment. Oh, my goodness. But what is our score as we go into the next one?
At the end of that round, Jim O'Hare has 5 points, and Dulce Sloan has 1 point with a round of questions for Dulce coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Dulce about a topic she knows about. Plus, later, Dulce and Jim will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself. This episode of Go Fact Yourself is supported in part by Fortunato Chocolate.
Yummy.
Fortunato Chocolate. Helen, did you receive your shipment of Fortunato Chocolate?
I received a sample of Fortunato Chocolate, and it is chocolatey, divine amazingness. Mm.
I was going to say something similar, but you beat me to it. That is exactly what it is. You know, since 2008, Fortunato No. 4 chocolate has been prized by top chocolatiers and pastry chefs in Michelin-starred restaurants. It's made from rare, organically grown heirloom cacao from the jungles of northern Peru, and it's never been available to the general public until now.
Ooh.
Yeah. I didn't know all of that.
So
I just
fancy.
Knew that it was delicious.
I mean, I just ate it being like, oh my God, somebody sent me chocolate. It's going in my face and this is amazing. I mean, it's very high quality chocolate, but I didn't know that it had such provenance.
Oh, oui, oui, oui. Fortunato number 4 or nombre 4. I don't know how to say number in French anymore.
Numéro 4.
Numéro? Numéro 4. Whatever. Fortunato No. 4 is made by a family company that has direct relationships with over 400 farmers and a socially conscious business model that helps farm families earn more so you can feel good while tasting good. Oh, man. The ones I got, I had a milk chocolate, I had a dark milk, and I had a dark. And it turns out that there can be math involved because it's available in 36% milk, 47% dark milk, and 68% dark. And it's sold in 1.1 pound bars with minimal packaging to help keep it affordable.
My favorite was the dark milk.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, really? You like the dark milk?
I like the dark milk.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
I usually go for dark, but this dark milk?
It's good stuff. Hey, you probably want to get some of this chocolate for yourself. Well, to do it, you can go to podcastchocolate.com/gofact. That's podcastchocolate.com/gofact.
That's podcastchocolate.com/gofact.
That's right. You can be like Helen and me and enjoy delicious, high-quality Fortunato No. 4 chocolate by going to podcastchocolate.com/gofact.
Thank you, Fortunato Chocolate.
I can remember as a child thinking it was odd that here was this can full of meat.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This week on my show Bullseye, David Letterman on shame, regret, and canned hams.
Is this the best delivery version of pork?
That's this week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Jim O'Hare with 5 points and Dulce Sloan with 1 point. Once again, here's Jakeith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Dulce, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the TV show Star Trek The Next Generation, the TV show Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and historical Korean dramas. A lot of woohoos going on here. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Well, the thing is, in our house, you could not talk if Star Trek was on. Mm. If Star Trek, The X-Files, or basketball was on, you have to go sit down somewhere.
Oh,
but
wow.
My mother would always tell us that, like, when Star Trek premiered, we saw Worf for the first time. Me and my brother would ask her, Mommy, why does that man have peanut butter on his forehead?
I hope she hit you.
No, she was like, okay, let me tell you how special effects makeup works. Yeah. So it's a show that I've always loved. Brent Spiner, I follow him on various social media accounts. And I'm always like, I love you. And he says nothing.
wow.
And then it comes on in reruns on BBC America. So I will watch them and be like, oh, yeah, that is what happened. You know, and my hatred of Alexander, the weakest kid in American history. I hate that kid. Worf's
he's
son.
The worst.
Ah, I hate that kid.
Dulce, you also said you know a lot about Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes, because it is my dream in life to be a Klingon in a Star Trek, and not these new J.J. Abrams Klingons or the ones they do on a Star Trek Discovery. I'm talking about old school Indian Remy, hair popping, titties popping. Like, I'm trying to be one of the sisters. Like, I am trying. I think it was the Baylor sisters. Like, I'm trying to, even though one of the actresses who passed away recently, I'm trying to be old school Klingon, giving you just realness. I want, I'm out here with the sword. I can't, my mind is completely blank. I hate it.
That's all right. Well, so how does that relate to Deep Space Nine in particular?
Well, it relates to Deep Space Nine because it was the first time that these storylines weren't episodic. It became serialized. So you have the overarching story of what happened to the Bajorans, or as my brother calls them, the Space Jews. And so,
by the way, it's my dream to be a Bajoran.
See?
Like to play an old school Bajoran on some Star Trek.
Definitely. Yes. And I think what I really like about Deep Space Nine is that everything in Next Generation, it was all of the non-humanoid character, all the non-Earth human characters were at kind of accessories to the story. As opposed to when you have Deep Space Nine, it's you learn the history of the Bajorans. You learn the history, you learn more about the Klingon Empire. So I liked it because you got to learn more about the other species on the show.
Awesome.
Oh, that's very humanistic of you.
Thank you, friend.
It's very like broad thinking. Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Well, speaking of history, you also said you know a lot about historical Korean dramas.
Okay. Listen, I can't pronounce anything, so I'm not going to be a jackass. You're not going to get me canceled. I'm not doing any of that, right?
Okay.
But, so, you know how, like, so basic TV, a lot of places had a Spanish channel, right? Mm-hmm. In Atlanta, there's also a Korean channel called KTN. So, when I was in, like, high school, middle school, there's nothing on TV. I'm flipping through the channels, and I find this show on the Korean TV station called Bluebird with English subtitles. Mm-hmm. And then when streaming came out, like Hulu and Netflix and all of that, and then there was Drama Fever, RIP Drama Fever, and now there's Viki. So there's different apps and stuff that I watch. And now that's how I learned about Kisangs. That's how I learned about, ooh, you can really do anything. And if somebody is from noble blood, you will be murdered.
There's so much intrigue.
There's
so much palace intrigue and backstabbing, and like you don't know who your friends are, and like someone you think is on your side has actually been plotting your murder for 20 years. Like, it's crazy, the historical.
And the king's son is never the king's son.
There was always some hanky panky.
There's always somebody thinking that they somebody's child. That's not also the second consular. It's always going to be the enemy to the king. Like, if he's standing, literally, because they say the left and the right side, if dude's standing on the left side, he hates the king. He's trying to take him out. But his daughter is always married to the crown prince, so he's the king's brother. Like, they're so good. And then I learned about Kisangs, which is like the Korean version of the geishas. And, like, because there's this great show called Wang Jingyi, and this was so bad. They just made a movie about her and a TV show like 10 years ago. You know how bad of a you gotta be for people to be making movies about you 500 years after you died?
That should be the tagline on the poster. In theaters.
And in theaters in the fall.
Wow, that was quite a description. I really love your passion about all of it.
I love it.
All right, so to summarize, Dulce, you said you know a lot about the TV show Star Trek The Next Generation, the TV show Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and historical Korean dramas. Today we're going to quiz you about Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Praise Jesus! Yes!
Now,
the only reason why we didn't go with historical Korean dramas is because there's no expert that's more expert than you.
Yeah,
frankly.
Really, sounds like it.
And if they do, they
don't
English.
Speak English.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. How many times do you think you've gone through each episode of Deep Space Nine?
Let's see. Life. Well, I went through I recently watched it like a few years ago, and then I started doing it again in quarantine. But it was like probably like 2 years ago, I went through the whole
thing. So you've seen them all multiple times.
Yeah, I think I've seen a few of them multiple times. You know, that's when we realized that Gul Dukat looked much better as a Cardassian than he did as a Bajoran. And a human man's neck was way too long, is what I really learned.
You know, I was on an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Tell me more about the show.
Seriously? Oh, my God.
And I only did one episode. And somebody, I was selling my condominium in Hollywood, and somebody bought it because I was on Star Trek.
No!
This guy, his kid was obsessed with Star Trek and said, Dad, please buy this place.
What?
Because he lived here.
Let's get to Dulce's topic, because I know she's getting very excited.
Me and Dulce are chomping at the bit about Star Trek.
All right. Just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic, Dulce, to test your mastery in the subject with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Jim, do listen closely, because if Dulce answers incorrectly, which seems harder and harder to believe as we go along, you can steal. Jim, by the way, how much do you know about Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Everything you guys have spoken about in the last 20 minutes might as well have been in Korean, because I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
This is where I am with you.
Yes. Well, we'll see if Dulce gives you a chance to jump in. Here's your first question, Dulce. Dulce, one of the most popular episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine features lots of footage from one of the most popular episodes of Star Trek, the original series. It involves the Deep Space Nine crew traveling back in time to help the Enterprise crew deal with an infestation of what furry, cute, but deadly creatures.
What were they called? Tribbles?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Tribbles.
Also, it's always hilarious to hear Worf talk about what a fierce enemy they were. Because it's like...
These are tennis balls with more fur. Yeah.
What weapon were they holding?
Yes. Fun fact, Walter Koenig, who played Mr. Chekhov on the original series, visited the set when they were shooting the DS9 episode and showed the actors how to work the controls of the bridge. He also said that he was paid 8 times more for the archival footage that they used of him than he was paid to appear in the original episode.
Wow.
By the way, you can hear Walter Koenig as a guest on Go Fact Yourself on episode 58.
Woo!
All right, Dulce, here's question number 2. Deep Space Nine is a space station that orbits a war-torn planet where one population of the planet was recently liberated from another. What is the name of either the occupying force or the liberated one?
The Cardassians occupied Bajorans on Bajor in the next to the wormhole.
Helen?
That is correct.
That, of course, is correct for the points.
Damn, that's
very
impressive.
Nice. Very nice. You are 2 for 2.
I did it.
You did it. Here's question number 3. The most popular gathering spot on DS9 was Quark's Bar. One of his regular customers was a Lurian trader who always seemed to be sitting at the bar. Although he is said to be very chatty, he never speaks a word during the entire series. What is this barfly's name?
It starts with an M.
I'm going to be a little more specific than that.
Okay, can I get a hint?
Helen, how about that first hint?
It sounds like something people do at a funeral.
Mourn.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Very nice for the point. Excellent use of the hint. Fun fact, his name Mourn is a deliberate anagram of Norm, which is a tribute to the barfly on Cheers, played by George Wendt. By the way, George Wendt appears as our Cheers expert on episode 69 of Go Fact Yourself. I promise not every fun fact will be plugging our own show. You're 3 for 3, Dulce. Here's question number 4. Avery Brooks played Captain Benjamin Sisko. He also directed what is considered one of the best episodes of the show, in which his character has a vision of himself as a 20th century Earthman named Benny Russell. With what unusual occupation?
Now, he wrote Sci-Fi Story.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. He was a science fiction writer. Very nice. Fun fact, all of the other DS9 regulars played 1950s characters in Sisko's vision. All right, Dulce, you have a chance to go 5 for 5 if you can get this question right. You do still have a hint available. The valiant crew of Deep Space Nine doesn't just hang around the space station. They go off on adventures using ships called runabouts. Each runabout has its own name, but they are all named after what?
Rivers.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Rivers on Earth. Dulce Sloan is 5 for 5. Congratulations,
wow.
Dulce.
I did it!
You did it!
Fun fact,
in the 3rd season, a much larger ship, the Defiant, took over as the primary vessel for exploration away from the station. All right, Dulce, you've obviously done very well in that round, but now here is your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. They'll say, when a series runs 176 episodes over 7 seasons, as DS9 did, actors and their characters are likely to go through changes. One such change came when the second in command of DS9 got pregnant, and so did the actor playing her. But this was not a normal pregnancy, at least for the character, because she was not carrying her own child. So, for up to 3 points, what is the full name of the character who was second in command on DS9? What character's child did she carry? And what actor who was also pregnant at that time played that second in command?
Okay, it's Kira Nerys is the second in command. She's okay. Carrying Keiko O'Brien's baby.
All right.
And Nana Visitor is the one who was playing Kira Nerys, who was pregnant in real life, who was pregnant from the character, from the actor who played Dr. Bashir.
All right, Helen is taking note of that very confidently said answer. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is an award-winning actor who's played on Broadway in movies and as the second in command on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's Nana Visitor!
Nana Visitor! Hello, Nana!
Dulce is freaking out!
Dulce, are you still with us?
No.
No, you're not. She's gone. She's ascended to heaven.
My soul left.
Dulce is so impressive. She for sure knows more than I do. Okay. No doubt. Never.
Oh
no
my
doubt.
God, I'm freaking out too. It's really you.
I can't live. I was literally talking to somebody. I think I was talking to my brother the other day about how when Bajorans give birth, it can't be noisy. It's got to be quiet. And so Kira couldn't give birth to Keiko's baby because her man and Chief O'Brien was messing with her, making too much noise in the birthing suite, and she had to kick him out so she could have Keiko's baby.
It's unbelievable.
Wow.
I can't believe your breadth of knowledge of the show. Yeah. I am going to tell Dorn, I'm going to call Dorn right after we get off and talk about the peanut butter on his forehead.
You know what I love about you is that you are so recognizable because your prosthetic was kind of like not that elaborate. Like you had a little bit of the prosthetic between your eyes, but like you were obviously very recognizable. Your face was very recognizable, where I know a lot of actors like Michael Dorn, for instance, you might not necessarily recognize him on the street because his prosthetics were so elaborate.
Oh, you hear his voice and you know exactly who that is.
Because his voice is a panty dropper. You not gonna notice if the man is talking to you. Also, I have always wanted like the Bajoran earring. I was like, yo, man, don't let me mess around and get some money. Because I am getting a Bajoran earring. Because just the outfit, because literally me and one of my friends, we were gonna go to Dragon Con, and we were going to do Worf and Jadzia's wedding, but he was going to be the Trill, and I was going to be the Cleon.
Yes!
Have you ever been to Dragon Con?
Yes, I have, because wow. Me and some other people started a hashtag called Black People at Dragon Con, because it's literally a Where's Waldo. So you're literally yelling across from, hi, other black person, what you doing? It's a great time. I love Dragon Con. And we don't just kind of like scam our way. Sometimes we pay to get in. Sometimes you scam your way in. But you get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nana, what's your experience at those conventions like? I know you're very active in that community.
It's wild. Dragon Con is the wildest of all. Dragon Con is mostly about the people who are, you know, coming to dress up and steampunk and every, you see everything there, and it's wall to wall people, and it's the raciest costumes you'll see anywhere. They're all at Dragon Con.
Well, you know why Dragon Con is so wild? Because that weekend in Atlanta, it's Dragon Con, it's Black Gay Pride, it's a basketball tournament and a NASCAR race all going on at the same time.
Oh my God.
This is the future liberals want.
Right. Yes. So you'll see, so there's like a Hooters across the street from like the Sheridan, and you'll literally see young black gay kids in the just various amazing looking outfits, then a bunch of rednecks in NASCAR gear, and then a bunch of kids dressed as Harry Potter, and they're all going to look at wings and titties. It's a very...
This works. Whatever brings you together.
Exactly. Labor Day weekend in Atlanta, Georgia is just a time where many groups of people come together.
I had this dream once after eating too much seafood.
Nanan, let me ask you this. Is it true that I read that your manager actually originally told you not to take this role when it was offered?
Yeah, science fiction was considered the kiss of death for a career. And, you know, they wanted me on a fast track to be on a network show and make hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this was more, you know, it was a whole new thing. We weren't on a network. Mm. So, I mean, in terms of that, in terms of Star Trek, they know that it can be the kiss of death. So he told me no. Mm. And I originally turned it down. I said, okay.
What?
Then Rick Berman, one of the producers, called me up. And he said, let me tell you who's writing this show. Let me tell you about our set. Let me tell you what we plan for the next 7 years. Mm. I told him right then and there, I'm changing my call. I want in on this, absolutely. Yay! And I was so glad I did. I ended up firing the manager. So.
Oh, nice.
Good, he's useless. Whether it was true or not, it affected my career or not, I wouldn't change a thing, not a thing. That role was such an honor to play.
I saw in an interview that you said playing Kira was like Disneyland for an actor. What did you mean by that?
I meant you get to go on every ride. You're going to be imprisoned in stone. You're going to be this incredibly scary intendant character who just kills people by snapping her fingers and is polyamorous. It just doesn't matter. You're going to show every human aspect there is. Mm. I got to do it all.
Yeah. I watched some clips where you got to be very physical and do fighting scenes. Did you like doing those?
I got to
as
fight.
Well? You got to fight.
I love to fight. Those were important to me. And it was really important to me because, you know, as a woman, and my character was supposed to be kick-ass, I wanted to know how to kick-ass, you know? I wanted to do that part.
I can say my favorite part about... Oh, I feel like I'm going to cry.
It's all right.
Oh, Dulce! Yay! Dulce's getting emotional.
That's okay. We can handle that. Dulce, tell us what's going on.
It's so excited to meet you. I remember like getting up and like making breakfast, and like that was what we did on Sunday, was like make breakfast and like watch Deep Space Nine. Like that's what we always did. Like every, it's like CBS Sunday morning would come on and then Deep Space Nine would come on. And so we did that every Sunday. And it was, even if, as we got older, even if it was me and my brother in our room and my mother in her room, we still all watched it. But I think people don't talk enough about the character arc that Kira's character has in the last season, where she has to teach the Cardassians to be rebels against the Dominion. When she had to do all of this to get them out of her own planet.
So tell us about that from your perspective as an actor, Nana.
Well, one of the challenges, you know, when you're playing a role, you can't be judgmental. You have to be true to the character. And I was playing a racist, dead on a racist. If someone had a Cardassian face, I hated them. And there was really, what Dulce is saying, really an arc in the 7 years concerning exactly that. Not that I was ever, not that Kira was ever fond of Cardassians, but she certainly got over her racism and learned to work with them and see them as something other than the other.
Mm. This is going to be a very weird shift in gears, but I did find one fact about you that I wanted to confirm because I think it'll be fun for us to talk about, which is I know you're a big dog lover, which I know Jim O'Hare, you are as well. Is it true that you have or recently had a dog named Helen?
The love of my life, Helen, was a party standard poodle, which means she was a black and white poodle. She was famous when I lived in New York. People, I'd walk her in Central Park and everyone wanted to take pictures of her. All the tourists had to have a shot of her because she wore, and she, I had a string of pearls that she'd wear. And she'd be like, yes, now we can go.
Oh,
that's hilarious.
She was a fancier Helen than I.
All right. Well, I'm glad we can end on a lovely note like that. Let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the questions that we asked of Dulce. We wanted to know, what is the full name of the character who was second in command of Deep Space Nine? Helen, what did Dulce say?
Dulce said Kira Nerys.
And Nana?
Do we have any doubt she was right?
We do not have any doubt. That is a point for Dulce. Next, we wanted to know what character's child did she carry because it wasn't her own. Helen, what did Dulce say?
Dulce said Keiko O'Brien.
And Nana?
That is absolutely right.
Absolutely correct. There's another point. And what actor, gee, I wonder who was also pregnant at that time, played that second in command? Helen, what did Dulce say?
Dulce said Nana Visitor.
And Nana?
Couldn't be more correct.
That is a perfect game for Dulce Sloan. Congratulations, wow! Dulce.
I'm so excited I wrote that down. We could be talking to Khloe Kardashian right now. Oh, goodness.
Before we let you go, we are running late, but Dulce, is there anything quickly that you'd like to say to Nana while we have her here?
I love you.
There you go.
Dulce, I'm so impressed with you. You are someone I'd love to sit down and have dinner with and just talk for a couple of hours.
Oh, thank you. I'll probably cry the first hour.
Nana, if people want to find out more about you or your work, where can they do that?
I'm on Twitter. That's the best place to find me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was an honor and a pleasure. Nana Visitor, ladies and gentlemen. Nana Visitor. Thank you so much, Nana.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Dulce Sloan has 9 points and Jim O'Hare has 5 points.
All right. But now it comes to the final round that we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Jim and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Jim, Facebook is a social networking site.
True.
That is correct.
Dulce, MySpace is a social networking site.
True.
Correct.
Jim, MySpace still exists.
True.
Correct.
Dulce, MySpace has an official iPhone app.
True.
Incorrect.
No, sorry, Jim. MySpace has an official Android app.
False.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. No, MySpace used to be on both iPhone and Android, but the apps have been discontinued for years. Dulce, in 2005, MySpace was sold for over $1 billion.
True.
Incorrect.
Jim, in 2005, MySpace was sold for over $500 million.
True.
Correct.
Dulce, in 2007, MySpace was valued at $12 billion.
False.
Incorrect.
No, it really was. Jim, in 2011, MySpace was sold for an estimated $35 million.
True.
Correct.
Dulce, one of those 2011 buyers of MySpace was Justin Timberlake.
True.
Correct.
Jim, you shouldn't trust Justin Timberlake with your money.
False.
Correct.
And finally, Dulce, you shouldn't trust Justin Timberlake with your heart.
Oh. Cry Me a River taught us that you can't trust Britney Spears with your heart.
True. Correct.
We're not going to count those last two. That's all right. Let's thank Jim O'Hare and Dulce Sloan as Helen tabulates the final score. Helen, are you ready to announce the final score in tonight's episode?
I am at the end of the game. Dulce Sloan has 12 points and Jim O'Hare has 9 points.
A very high scoring game, but congratulations, Dulce Sloan. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Dulce, what will you do with your championship?
I'm going to spend it on dinner with Nana Visitor.
Yay! 1 hour of crying.
But several more hours of hanging out and talking about Michael Dorn.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap things up by giving our guests a chance to promote anything that they would like. Jim O'Hare, where can people find you? What do you have going on people can see?
You can find me at jimohare.com. I'm on Instagram at TheRealJimOHare. And O'Hare is O-H-E-I-R. If you want to find Parks and Recreation, we have left Netflix, and we are on the Peacock Network.
Ooh, very nice.
Streams. Yeah. I've been waiting for that to happen.
And then there's Facebook and whatever else. I don't know. I'm out there all over the place, kind of. Some projects that I can't really announce yet, but I've shot 3 different things during the virus that will be out there sooner than later.
Awesome. Well, we're so happy that you joined us. I'm glad we were able to do this. It was a pleasure to host you and have you on the show. Jim O'Hare, everybody.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you
so
much.
I'm
so
happy.
And don't say I'm blown away by your knowledge. You are
a
genius.
I'm a big old nerd.
All right. That big old nerd, Dulce Sloan, where can people find you?
I'm on the internet at Dulce Sloan because my mother gave me an awesome name. So it's just me. No matter how many people try to make fake accounts on Instagram, because I will report you. And that's D-U-L-C-E-S-L-O-N in Spanish, not Italian. My mom went to college.
I'm on the interwebs. I'm on the Facebooks. I'm on the Instagrams. I have a podcast out now called That Black Ass Show, where I talk about black creatives, about black TV shows and movies. I talk to creatives about black TV shows and movies. I have a movie called Chick Fight coming out in November. So watch that, please. And I have a cartoon with Fox called The Great North that's coming out next year. And watch The Daily Show. Sometimes I'm on, sometimes I'm not. My name ain't on nothing. That's Trevor. He on every night. I'm on when I'm on, baby.
Awesome. Well, we're so happy that you joined us, Dulce Sloan. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is your favorite person named Helen Hong, because she is, spoiler alert, Helen Hong.
That's right.
Yay.
What an intro.
Yes. You can find me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong, because unlike Dulce, there's a lot of Helen Hongs out there, and I'm the funny one. I'm the funny one. So
indeed,
don't follow the angry Helen Hong or the regular Helen Hong or the unoriginal Helen Hong. I'm the funny one. And I'm on a show on Sci-Fi Channel right now called The Magical Girl Friendship Squad. It's animated, so check that out on Sci-Fi Network and follow me at Funny Helen Hong.
She is funny. She is Helen. She is Hong. She is Funny Helen Hong. And me, you can find me on Twitter at J_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out, and writing transitions for a game show that I cannot name 800 times. that just leaves me to thank Jim O'Hare, Dulce Sloan, Judy Kuhn, Nana Visitor. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.fandom.com, and buy our T-shaped shirt at MaxFunStore.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live someday. It's free. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like Shay Noor did. He, she, or they said they got who on the show? Thanks, Shay Noor. We can't believe it either. Helen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the country. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer, editor, and awesome guy overall is Julian Burrell. Special thanks to Tracy Christian and Caleb Cartier at TCA MGMT, Michael Cerveris, Mark Norberg, Elise Areccio, Riley Silverman, Raven Snook, Brandon J. Carr, Clint Tauscher, Mike Avellanos, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Eric Tran, and Christine Vallada. I've been Helen Hong.
Let's go watch Star Trek.
Yes!
I've actually never seen it before.
Oh, I can't believe I do a podcast with you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.